we understand that, hey, we hope to get to the mountaintop of success or purpose or meaning in the future, but that means nothing if you can't enjoy the journey, if you can't just like really roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty along the way.
Hello and a warm welcome to our listeners. Today, I'm talking to a very special guest, Brandon Bryant. Brandon is an African-American millennial and entrepreneur, influencer, social media brand consultant, investor, and many, many more things. He quitted his Wall Street job as an investment banker to support startups founded by people of color and women to change the face of entrepreneurship. I'm honored to welcome him to the show and find out more about himself, his passions, his goals, up and downs in his career. Welcome to another episode of Partners in Time. Hey, Brandon, how are you? Thanks for being my guest today.
What's going on? Happy to be here.
Where are you right now? What's your position?
I am based out of Cleveland, Ohio. We just had the All-Star game here for the NBA All-Star game. So it was really great. But it is currently cold, so I'm just trying to stay warm.
Did you see that game? Were you at the game?
Yes, I went to the game. One of my really good friends from high school is actually the mayor of Cleveland. So I had a chance to kind of see the ins and the outs and some of the behind the scenes of what was going on in the city. But there was a lot of momentum. A lot of the players were here. A lot of folks in entertainment and media. And we're coming off a pretty good high as a city right now.
Yeah, I mean, isn't Super Bowl finalist sort of Clevelandish close to it, right? Like,
yeah, it's not as big as the Super Bowl, but it is as good as you can get outside of there.
I mean, it's kind of nice. And the mayor of Cleveland is a high school friend of yourself. That's amazing. So you're the plus one to any event that's probably going to be, right?
Hey, you know, I cannot deny or confirm, but let's just say that it was a good time.
It sounds amazing. Are you wearing a watch right now?
Yes, I am.
What kind of? Maybe IWC. I'm wearing the.
Yeah, I'm definitely wearing the IWC. I'm wearing the Big Pilot 43 with the blue dial, with the kind of like screw in crown. It's nice. It's a very nice watch. I really like that. It can be seen as a statement piece. It can be dressed up. It can be dressed down. And also with some of the newer IWC models, it's really easy to take off the straps and to change them in and out. And I think from a person who's a little bit newer to the space, it was hard to bring out, like go on Amazon and buy a watch kit and try to like change the bands yourself. So now that totally, it's just like one click of a button, it's a lifesaver.
So you do change them a lot because that's new. So like, do you change them regarding your outfits or how do you, what's the decision making in changing the straps? What's happening?
Outfit and occasion. So the occasion could do for something that's like more calfskin and closer to leather. Or if it's more informal, it can be something that's rubber or something that's like more of a textile or fabric. And I grew up being the guy who had the you know, small timepiece that I always changed the straps on. And I thought it was really hard to do once you got really high quality watches because you had to be extremely careful. You don't want to break anything, especially when this is like a timepiece you can pass on to your children.
And what's the strap of choice for an NBA All-Star game where you're attending the mayor of the city that's presented?
Yeah, that's a good one. I have the blue calfskin. So like that navy blue that kind of matches the actual navy blue dial of the watch. So it's cool to have that blue on blue action. And I'm surprised because I feel like IWC is a very refined and like, if you know type of brand, but a lot of folks who are collectors in a space really are excited about IWC. So a lot of folks who already understand that this was one of the newer versions of the Big Pilot.
Absolutely. So are people approaching you? Are people talking to you online or offline on events like that?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Definitely. I feel like IWC is definitely up there now with some of the top watch collectors. And I feel like IWC is for the folks who may not be as splashy, folks who just want to be undercover. But if you look at the wrist, you know that they are a watch collector.
100%. Are you a watch guy? Like, did you always had watches and were wearing watches in your life?
Yeah, I think I was a more simpler guy. I was like a Timex and Seiko, kind of like Casio guy, like something that was like super muted, very low key, but something that like really kind of enhanced the outfit. But as I've been working with IWC over the few years, I have like five now. So it's really exciting to start to build out a real kit. I have like the boxes or the watch box where you put in the watches and all the nice felt. So it feels like interesting to actually take care of my timepieces instead of just throwing them in my luggage to just go to whatever place I'm going to. So I feel like I'm more mature and growing up now.
100%. Is the 43 Big Pilot you're wearing today, is that your favorite out of the five, or do you have like a special occasion, most favorite, like, or does that change maybe even? What's up?
Yeah, the Big Pilot 43 is becoming one of my favorites. I think it's because like it's chunky, but it's not too chunky. You know, like the dial and the screw in, like it's really nice. And then I think like I had larger dials, like 46 millimeter, et cetera. And those were probably a little bit too big for my wrist. So 43 is probably one of the, it's like a good in between. I think maybe 41 to 42 might have been too small. So 43 is really good. And then blue, I wear a lot of blue. So having the blue dials is pretty solid.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, on me, it changes. Like watches are growing the more I wear them. Like it's I could every 3 months, I'm changing my favorite IWC, which is one of the things I like about watches, to be honest, because it's not a one thing off and you have it and that's it, sort of. So it kind of changes with your personality, at least in my case, because I'm changing my personality. Like I'm not very constant in what I do within the last 15 years, I would say. Do you remember your first watch ever, the first you ever had?
Man, this is it. I don't remember my first watch from like way back in the day. I think it was a G-Shock, to be honest with you. I think it was definitely a G-Shock, little bit bulky. And I got it in a few different colors. I had it in black. I had a red one. And then I think it was Casio after that. Like, so I had these like very cool kind of tacky watches that I wanted to try to wear when I swim. it was one of those things.
How old are you? Just to give it into perspective.
Yeah, I was probably like in that 8 to 10 range. So I was in elementary school.
And how old are you now?
32 now. Yeah, 32 now.
That's a great age.
Nice and right. Not too old, not too young.
That's the prime age. It's pretty good. Talking of holy grails, because I have like in golfing, I golf a lot, and I have one course I once want to play in my lifetime, which is Cypress Point Club. If you're not into golf, you're not understand, but it's like the VIP section you can't buy in of Pebble Beach, which is like already one of the best courses in the world. But Cypress Point is super hard to get in. So regarding watches, do you have like some sort of a dream, holy grail, life goal watch? That you want to get one day?
Yeah, I would say there are two. Obviously, one is the IWC and one's not. But from the IWC perspective, I think the Big Pilot's watch, the Lewis Hamilton edition. And I was realizing that I know that you have affiliation with them, but 100 made in the world. And this is, I think this is maybe a little bit adventurous for IWC to make a watch like this. That's burgundy, not only on the strap, but also on the dial, and then the screw-in crown being gold. So it was a little bit outside of their typical watches. So I thought that this is one that's like an awesome instantaneous conversation piece. And anyone who's in the know will definitely come up to you and chat about that and just wonder, how are you one of the 100 people in the world that has this watch? So that's like my favorite Holy Grail IWC version. And then secondly, another special edition is probably like the newest Patek Philippe collaboration with Tiffany. Like that, being a sneaker collector growing up, like the Tiffany Dunks and Tiffany Green, it's just, it's one for the record books.
And Jay-Z was wearing that for the, like, it looked like Jay-Z had the first one, right? At least internet wise. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the way they wrote that out was cool with the whole Tiffany, the Tiffany Basquiat that went with it. It was like, whoa, you guys got a Basquiat and Tiffany Green's. It's great.
Yeah, regarding Lewis, I mean, so you're a fan of Lewis? You like what he does?
Big fan. I think I'm in my like sophomore or junior year of F1, so I can't say I've been around it since I was younger. But when I moved back home to Cleveland from New York, I was in New York for 7.5 years, moved back home in September of 2020. All of my friends here were big F1 fans, mainly because of the Netflix show and how you can like go through the whole season and understand all the ins and outs and all the politics that goes with that. And then they were finally starting to watch F1 live. And then they would love to see the recap of the season and all the behind the scenes. So I'm all caught up. I'm ready for the next season to kind of come out. And then even in great politics as usual, the last race of the season this year was very interesting, to say the least. And there was a lot of banter back and forth between me and some of my friends. And I was like, dude, did you not expect for there to be a showdown in the last race of F1? Of course there was going to be a showdown. And unfortunately, some of my friends were on the wrong side of that showdown. But at the end of the day, it was great. It was really great for the sport. Like, more people are paying attention to it now, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I saw a crazy number that more people watched the season final last year than Super Bowl 2022, which is insane, right? Like, worldwide. That's a huge thing. Like,
I thought
like Super Bowl is kind of, I think a soccer World Cup final is still above that, because Super Bowl, they kind of, they want to have that stamp of biggest sport event, whatever, because it's a single sport event. And so they say that we're the biggest single sport event, but worldwide, a World Cup final, a soccer World Cup final, I think is still number one. But I worked 4 years in Formula One. Started 2016, and it's insane how that changed around and how much Lewis also did for younger, cooler, different people to watch that sports. Because before Lewis, it was, to be honest, quite white, and it was quite old too. It was a father and son thing, and me being German, it was super German with Schumacher and stuff. And now, I mean, now Meg the Stallion is on Austin with, like, it's a rapper thing, and I like that a lot, and I like the diversity of it a lot, and it's kind of interesting to listen to people. And I want to know a little bit about you. So basically, you're 32, you live in Cleveland. Did you grow up in Cleveland? And what's that finance investment? I looked up, we have a couple of mutual friends, Anand and Dee, which are, to be honest, the most bright people in investing in finance. So if I'm having questions, I'm asking Anand about how to invest, how to buy stocks and stuff. So if you're that, so maybe I can ask you in the future because it's interesting. So walk me through your life. You did grow up in Cleveland. So what are you doing? What's your job? What are you doing?
So I'll give a little bit of background about where I'm from, and then I'll talk about kind of what I'm up to now from a professional standpoint. Originally from Cleveland, went to Ohio State for school. I studied economics there. I actually was in this awesome leadership program as a sophomore in college, and met my business partners for Harlem Capital, Henri and Jared, some 11 years ago in that leadership program. The three of us end up interning together in finance in New York. And then the three of us also moved to New York full time after graduation. We lived in Harlem. We were roommates and we worked at the same investment banks. And so we got to know each other personally and professionally pretty well. And 2 years after that, we had this idea to invest in our neighborhood. So we were like, Harlem is a neighborhood of great heritage, the Harlem Renaissance, et cetera. And we wanted to be a part of this new Harlem Renaissance. So we started to invest our personal capital into small businesses and real estate in Harlem. And then we kind of stumbled into early stage startups and saw that technology is the future. It's the next industrial revolution, if you will. And that's where a lot of generational wealth was going to be created. So we wanted to make sure that we were on the forefront of that industry. And we still also wanted to focus on people of color and women, just like folks who look like us. And so we ended up raising our own fund, and it was a $40 million fund. We ended up doing 28 investments out of that fund. And then now we are on our second fund, which is a $134 million fund. And we'll probably do somewhere around 45 deals out of this fund. We've actually done 11 deals so far. And the industries we typically look at, mostly software. So anything that's enterprise software, future of work, future of e-commerce, fintech, or consumer technology, that's kind of some type of automation, some type of software. And we're also looking a lot into the Web3 and crypto space. So those same verticals that I mentioned before, but just with a Web3 lens and folks who are building those in the Web3 space. And we typically do $1 to $3 million into seed rounds. So we're very focused on the early stage investments, your first kind of $2 to $5 million that you fundraise. And we're seven folks full time. Three live in New York. I was in New York for about 7.5 years. And now I have moved back to Cleveland in September of 2020. But we also have folks who are in Miami, DC, and also in LA.
And what about that first round? What kind of, can you tell me a story of one of the investments you did? Like, so I can understand it better.
Definitely. Just can tell you about some of our companies. Yeah. One example, there's a company called Drip, D-R-I-P. This is a company that I'm super excited about. It is a live shopping platform. So just think about folks who, we call it shoptainment. So while you're shopping, you're also being entertained. And so they focus on collectibles. So folks who are selling Pokemon cards or Yu-Gi-Oh cards or Funko Pops. Also, they focus on sports memorabilia. So sports cards and basketballs and footballs, et cetera. And they recently got into the Web3 space. So now they enable crypto payments. So people who are shopping for collectibles and want to pay for those collectibles in crypto, they can. And that's through a partnership that they have with Coinbase. And they also just recently put out a new product that lets you mint NFTs during your live stream. So they already have this like really cool, innovative way of commerce. And they're also kind of taking on this Web3 lens of being able to let you use crypto, but also mint NFTs and create new kind of like fungible tokens, if you will. So they're on a rocket ship right now. They recently raised, and those folks are, they're based out of New York and San Francisco. So something else I'll say, we've been mainly doing US companies over the last 2 or 3 years, but we did do our first two companies that were international. One was out of Africa and the other one was out of Latin America.
Okay. And they are looking for money and show up on your, or do you find them or do they find you?
Good question. So we see about 3,000 deals a year. 50% come straight from management. So folks reach out to us via email or social media, et cetera. The other 50% kind of comes from our friends, our former colleagues, other VCs or founders that we've already invested in. We have over 40 founders that we've invested in. Those folks tend to have people in their networks that are also starting companies. So it's about 50-50 from inbound versus just our network. And also something else that I might mention, since we're focused on people of color and women. And typically people of color and women have not been funded in the VC space. They actually only get 4% of the capital that goes to the space, despite being 70%+ of the US population, people of color and women combined. And so we are great storytellers around what we're doing. Yeah, it is. That delta, 4% to 70%.
It's insane.
And let's also mention that hundreds of billions of dollars go to venture capital each year. So you have delta of 4 to 70 times 100+ billion each year. There's a lot of opportunity in this space, which is why we're focused on it. But we are all about storytelling because we also believe that you can't be what you can't see. So everything we do, we build in public around it. So we have about 400+ thousand followers across Twitter and Instagram and all of our other social media platforms. And we use that as like a direct communication avenue to the community that we're trying to support. So it's been really awesome to kind of build this from scratch. We were kind of like the first large fund that was diverse owned, but also diverse focused from an investment lens to kind of scale.
That's amazing. So did any invest slide into your DMs on Insta? And that's been the initial. I'm sorry to ask that question, but like it's 2022.
Yeah.
It's new ages. Is that happening? Are people with good ideas, good opportunities sliding into your DMs? And that's the first contact?
It's both ways. It's definitely both ways. Like, I think Twitter and LinkedIn are the best. You know, social media, Instagram in and of itself is a little bit more flash in a panty, but Twitter and I think LinkedIn are a lot more professional and a lot more like high level educational, if you will. So I actually, and we as a team are very proactive about reaching out. So we actually like carve out time individually as team members to reach out on LinkedIn and Twitter to founders and other operators in a space and also other VCs. Weekly, like we're weekly on the offense. We're all about like intercepting opportunity. And we've actually done a lot of investments of people that we went outbound on. And Drip technically is one of them. Like we knew that the founder's name is Javon. He was an investor at another fund. And he was one of the only Black investors at that fund. So we just wanted to make sure that he had an open avenue to us and just like-minded people in a space. And as he kind of spun out of that VC firm that he's working at and was starting a company, we were super top of mind because we had already started a relationship with him before he had even thinking about starting a company. And now we're one of his largest investors in his new company.
And is it exclusively that you go to people of color or women? So is that a no-go? Is that a deal breaker? Is it a deal breaker then if somebody is white owned, for example, or too male owned? Do you then really say no if there's a great opportunity in there, or how do you handle that?
This is a question we get all the time. What we typically say, no, this is a good question for sure. We are nowhere near exclusionary at all. We're just prioritizing certain folks. So we're focused on teams that have folks on the founding team who are Black, Latino, or a woman of any race. And that's like our priority. And internally, like we tend to focus on 75% of our investments being focused on those type of founders. But we have invested in the past in folks who are not specifically have that ethnicity or background.
Okay. And there's enough white funding out there, I guess. So I think you're doing a great job. One bad news that happened to you is I want to talk about it. You dropped out of a list, and it happened because of your age, right? You're not under 30 under 30, which is one of the holy grails. You're out of there, right? You're 32 now. But it's a sick thing. Like you've been in there in that, like it's external. Like it's not because you didn't succeed in financial things. It's mainly because, you gained age. So, but talk me about it. How did that happen? How did you find out? What was that feeling like seeing this, and how much did it help, honestly?
Yeah. And I know, this is, conversation that you've had with the folks at Group Chat, Dean, Anand, and how important or how not important this is. Here's what I'll say. Forbes 30 Under 30 was awesome. We, all four of our teammates made the list, which was rare. It was rare that even like two founders on the same team, let alone if you had more than two founders on a team, for them all to make it. So that was great. And we all were people of color. We also had a chance to ring the bell at the NASDAQ because we were, you know, one of the Forbes, or sorry, not one, but were made the Forbes list. And I think like we were able to like meet so many amazing, not only founders and operators in this space, but that's the whole reason why I had a chance to meet IWC as a brand, was through one of their like collaboration partners. And we did a dinner and I had a chance to meet the president at the time of IWC and start to like build like a very long-term relationship. So what I would say is Forbes is the Forbes list is what you make of it. Many people make the list and many people don't use it to their advantage, but it is, can be, you know, a marketing tool for some folks, right? Like you get a chance to be in rooms that you would never be in before. It is a smell test approval for some individuals, and you can potentially meet some really great partners internally. And then Forbes has also become a partner for Harlem Capital. We've had a chance now to work with Forbes and some of our founders, and two to three of our founders write for Forbes quarterly, and they'll do two to three articles with them. So it's been a pretty strong relationship with them, well outside of just making the list. And I think it's only down to the person to figure out how do you make this more than just a list and something that's a vanity metric to something that's more of a strong partnership and more of a platform for you to kind of execute and make something of a purpose out of it.
I'm talking to you for now 20 minutes, and I'm already realizing that long-term things are way more important in your life, I think. Is that your key to success as well, that you're not looking for one-off, biggest shot, whatever, but like relationships or long projects? Is that one of the things you would advise younger here listeners?
For sure. I mean, it's always about the long game. I mean, you got to think about the industry I'm in. We invest capital into companies that are sometimes an idea, something on a napkin, something that is like the most viable product without any customers. And we don't find out if we're right until 7 to 10 years, sometimes closer to 12 years into the future. So we're very, very long-term thinkers. And even going back to that, like Harlem Capital in and of itself, our mantra is we want to change the face of entrepreneurship by investing in 1,000 diverse entrepreneurs over the next 20 years. So just our mantra and the foundation that we built our company on, our ethos and our DNA, if you will, is always about long-term. And some of our even top values, one of them is enjoy the journey. We understand that, hey, we hope to get to the mountaintop of success or purpose or meaning in the future, but that means nothing if you can't enjoy the journey, if you can't just like really roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty along the way.
Absolutely. And is the, like, if you invest in companies, because it's very interesting to listen to you, Brandon, talking like that, because it's exactly the values I really like as well. And I mean, I'm German, so we are, our work ethic is good, right? Like people say we're on time, we're effective, and combined to other people, we're not as good in selling or in creating ideas. I mean, there is no real German Silicon Valley or something like that that really shaped the world or something. We shaped the world in bookkeeping software, SAP and stuff like that, you know, like the mm-hmm. not so cool, fancy, flashy stuff. But if you invest into, you just said ideas maybe sometimes, what's more important? And I'm aware both of it is important, but if you have to choose one, is the idea or the work ethic of the people involved in the project more important for a decision for a thumbs up or thumbs down out of your company in investing?
Yeah, I would say always the founder. Like when you are underwriting an idea, obviously you're underwriting, you know, the market and other different things that might go into it. But at the end of the day, you're backing the founder or the co-founders in their vision. And you understand specifically because it is so early in the game and they're just getting off the ground that they may have to pivot left, right, up, down. They might have to change vision. And you're hoping that they have great grit, that they are a magnet for talent, that they're great storytellers, they're coachable, and they're leaders to their community through the ups and also through the downs. And for example, I mean, most people know of the company Slack. Stuart Butterfield initially started a gaming company. And that gaming company, after he raised his first round of capital, didn't work out. And he had a little bit of capital left, and he used that to pivot the business to what is Slack today, because as they were building this gaming company, they realized the game they were building was not the greatest, but the communication tool that they built for gaming was hot fire. And that this actually might be the real tool and a real opportunity in the future. And they pivoted all of their time and information there. And then what happened, right? Like Slack IPO, they got acquired by Salesforce. And, you know, now they've done pretty well for their, not only their company, but also their investors. And so betting on the jockey, not necessarily the horse, is something that I think we focus on at Harlem Capital.
Did Harlem Capital invest into Slack?
I wish we did. But same thing happened with Drip. Drip initially started as a live, as like a more like video conference platform. And then they pivoted into live streaming after 6 months. So I hope to be telling that story about Drip. And I hope that Drip is going to be a much more household name in the future. And obviously have great success for not only, you know, their team and their employees, but also for us. But wanted to share some type of a metaphor that a lot of people know about Slack and Salesforce, et cetera.
Yeah, totally. So what's been your worst investment? Do you still remember that? Do you think about that even?
Worst investment. We're still early. We're still early. We're extremely early. But one thing, maybe it's from more of my personal life. Worst investments were probably investing in penny stocks blindly. You know, anytime you invest into like a get rich quick scheme, or you're playing with options, et cetera, which I did in college, it never ended well. Like it was extremely high risk, high reward gambling. And to your point of asking like long-term and focus, things of that nature, I learned a lot early from losing small amounts of capital on very speculative things that it's just not worth the time and the stress to always look at charts and news and information. And I'd rather just invest in things that are a lot more stable and a lot more strong in things that I've underwritten with research and diligence.
And what's been the best invest so far?
Two things. We're really excited about Drip. We think that Drip is going to be one of our better investments, and they're on a rocket ship, and we think that they're going to be the future. So that's probably one. But two, I think the best investment was in myself. You know, I think there's a lot of people who want to take their time and effort and talent to invest into other people or other things, but not investing in yourself. Like you could only go so far as the work that you put into yourself. So I'm a very big person around self-development. And one mantra that I love from like an amazing, I almost think of him as a philosopher. He was the mentor to Tony Robbins. His name is Jim Rohn. He talked about working harder on yourself than you do on your job. And that changed my life. I think I read that quote when I was maybe 23 or so. And I realized that my entire career, which was short, but like I was an investment banker on Wall Street, I was doing really well financially. And I know that I was so focused on my job, I forgot to build myself up, to focus on being a better reader, a better listener, a better son, a better brother, a better uncle, better friend, et cetera. And once I started to focus more on myself and my mental health, my physical health, my emotional health, I became better in every single thing that I've done across the board, personally and professionally. And so I think that that's been my smartest investment outside of just, you know, professional has just been really focusing on fine tuning and sharpening myself. And then also surrounding myself by people who believe in those same kind of ethos and mantra.
That's I do agree a lot. It's very, it's 100% true. And penny stocks are very bad for your mental health.
Yeah. Two extremes, right? Yourself versus a penny stock.
It is like that. What do you do privately to take care of your mental? Like, do you do sports? What's your hobbies? Is there like some sort of a passion you have for another topic outside in Cleveland? What's the weekend stuff you do?
Yeah. So I'm very big on meditation. I'm very big on affirmations and speaking things out loud. And then also I've been pushing myself personally to do more reading, to do more writing. And then lastly, I'm a big basketball fan, but obviously basketball can start taking toll on your body as you're getting older. So I've started to pick up golf. Like, I am starting to get into the golf space. And when you're talking about Pebble Beach, few friends in the building that I live in went there last year, and I'm very jealous. And we went to like one of these simulator places here in Cleveland, and we played Pebble Beach together on the simulator. And I was like, yo, it'll be really cool in the future to kind of go there in person. But I got to get my golf swing a lot better before I head there.
Yeah, let's play down here. I live in Newport Beach, and next to it is a place called Pelican Hill, which is a beautiful, beautiful, not so diverse, but very, very beautiful golf course. So let's bring you in there. And they always look at me already, like, because I'm wearing way too flashy stuff. So maybe we shake that place a little bit up, and it's beautiful. It's really, really, really nice. Whenever you're in OC or LA, hit me up and we swing a couple of balls.
I would love to. And I think if I heard correctly from the group chat podcast, you have a store down there too. So we'd love to definitely stop by the store that you're running.
Correct. Yeah. On Pacific Coast. Not the most clever thing I ever did. I like the address a lot. Pacific Coast Highway. You know, like, I grew up as a kid in Germany, and one day I will be in the United States of America. And then this thing showed up, like, it's on Pacific Coast Highway. 6000 West Coast Highway is my address. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go for it. It's insanely expensive and makes no sense to do an office like I do it. And the store is kind of like, there's one or two people coming in a day. So it's not even close to making up, because we are an e-com brand. We are e-com. So it makes, but storytelling wise, coming back to what you guys do in investing as well, storytelling wise, it makes sense. And I use it. There's a piano in there now. So, and I soundproofed it. And I do exactly what you were talking about. And I 100% agree. So this year I did every day 15 minutes of piano, just playing and trying to learn new songs. And I was struggling super hard, because in the beginning you're not like it, you're not used to it. But you're learning fast, and or at least for me, learned a new song within 1 month, and it did help my mental health to have 15 minutes without a phone, without tasks, without, like, with one super, like, same with sports, we all agree. But stuff like that, I'm happier right now in this year because I'm doing that. So I do agree that reading and stuff like that is super important and super, super good. I could talk forever to you, Brandon, but we got to wrap it up at one point. I have a couple of reoccurring questions that I want to. So, and I want to ask you too. So one thing, if you could, it's about time. You know, the whole podcast is about time. It's a little bit about how to track time. If you can stop one moment, if you could have stopped one moment in the past of your life, what would you do? Like, what's that moment in your life so far where you could have stopped time?
Good question. It's hard to decide. I'm sorry for always having more than one. The two that make the most sense to me, one is graduation from Ohio State. Obama spoke at my graduation, and then the next day I flew to India for 2 weeks. Like, if I could have that, and it's just like a little time capsule week leading up to graduation, in India was like super awesome. And then the second time was when we closed our first fund. As I mentioned, no one has ever raised as much as capital as we had raised at that first fund. It was a $40 million fund that was diverse owned and diverse focused. And we think that we really had a chance to bust down a door that folks were knocking at for decades. So that was like just such an amazing time and weight lifted off of our shoulders and promise for the future that was given to us.
Kudos to that. Congratulations. It's very, very good. If you would have more time, what would you use it for? Just like if the day all of a sudden has 26 hours. Where are those 2 hours going to?
Reading and times with friends and family. I just wish I had way more time to read. I'm reading a book right now called Beta Ball, which is around how a former venture capitalist bought the Golden State Warriors and turned them around in 5 years, and how he did it with technology and strategy. So I would love to read a lot more books like that. And then I feel as though, especially after COVID and the pandemic, everyone's so spread out. So I would love to have just a lot more time to call or go meet up with friends and family in person.
Perfect. Thanks for being a partner in time here on our podcast. It was super inspiring and interesting to listen to you speaking. You do have a watchmaking class coming up this weekend, right?
Yes, I'm so
pumped. Streets of Schaffhausen, they told me. You know, like you get everything in the streets of Schaffhausen, close to the Rheinfall. They kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and the mayor will be there, which is really exciting. Okay. Yeah, we got some really strong Cleveland high signal folks who will be there, and it's pumped. Like the team mentioned that not everyone gets a watchmaking class, so in and of itself, it's a rarity. Have you been to one? Actually,
no. I'm not that important. Like just super important people that IWC really values get the watchmaking class. So I'm far off that. Like,
yeah, they're like, you got the podcast, you're good.
It kind of is like that. Yeah, but I'm gonna follow. I'm following you already on Insta, so I hope you post a little bit about it and some lit Insta story content game. I want to see about that watchmaking.
Definitely, class. Definitely.
Enjoy it. Have fun with it. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for this talk.
Thank you.
Dear listeners, thank you very much for your time. In our next episode, we are going to talk about the Pilot's Watches collection with George Russell. If you can't wait for our next episode and want to know more about IWC, our watches, and our heritage, you could check out our website or find us on social at IWC Journal on Instagram. Otherwise, I'd love to have you back for the next episode with George Russell on March 18, 2022. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast. This way, you're not missing any upcoming episode
of IWC's podcast, Partners in Time.